You're listening to Feeding the Mouth That Bites You with Ashley Parrish and Jessica Pfeiffer,
a weekly podcast guide on parenting teens and launching them into the world. As always, we are joined by psychologist and author, Dr. Ken Wilgus.
Hey, everyone, and thank you for joining us again on the podcast, Feeding the Mouth That Bites You. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Jessica.
Hi.
And Dr. Ken Wilgus.
Hey, everybody.
On today's episode, we are covering the topic of social media. This one is going to be juicy. Jessica, can you go ahead and start out and just define social media for us as we're going to talk about it on today's podcast?
Sure. I guess my definition is just based on the apps that my kids have, mm-hmm. the things that they use on their phones. I'd say it's texting and Snapchat, WhatsApp, Instagram, FaceTime. I know there are a lot of other apps out there that are more like games where people can converse with friends or even strangers online. It's right. just the way that our kids are communicating these days. You know, we do less face-to-face and more online. And so it's just the way that the kids are connecting with each other, with strangers, with parents.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, my oldest has social media and she is of the younger, you know, because she's 13. And I asked her recently, knowing that this podcast was coming up, about her friends and how many of her friends had social media and kind of what their rules were about it. And she shared with me this one story about a girlfriend of hers that is not allowed to have social media because her family knows of a family whose daughter committed suicide and she had social media. And Dr. Ken, I just want you to talk about this because it's a bit of an extreme story and you have more expertise and wisdom behind that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you guys are not in the same town as me and my practice in Dallas. So when you mention about somebody's family whose teenager committed suicide, usually I know something about who you're talking about. It tends to ripple through social groups so painfully. And it's a hard thing. And when it comes up around things like social media, what's really concerning is that it's very fertile soil for what I call fear-based parenting. And that is that, you know, if you hear about something like a teenager about suicide or about being abducted and things like that, of mm-hmm. course, it's going to really scare you. And it therefore makes you susceptible to what you think is the right parenting move, which is some kind of, I think in the case you were just talking about, we're just going to shut this all down. No social media at all. And that feels like I can check the box and walk away.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that it is not effective. And that's the main thing. It's not, if that were even workable, then great. It's not a matter of, is that mean? Is it nice? I can just tell you from experience, it won't work. It and very often absolutely backfires. So we'll talk about that another time because there's other examples of fear-based parenting, which is of course a particular issue and should be for Christian parents mm-hmm. because we're really not supposed to be afraid. But I think that's a good example. The social media can kick up the kind of fear that can, if you're not careful, result in very ineffective or even backfiring parenting interventions.
Right. And I think that this is just one way, because I know Jessica and I have talked about the most recent story in the news of, you know, one young little boy traveling hours to meet up with somebody else. So there are more mm-hmm. ways that it just kind of stirs the pot of fear-based parenting. And I do look forward to talking about that more.
Yeah. Well, there are so many negative stories you hear, but I also right. see some really awesome positive effects of social media with my own kids. I have a son that's gone off to college. And just this week, I got a picture of him on Snapchat with his lab coat and goggles on in his class, taking a picture of his experiment. And it made me feel like, well, at least he's headed to class today. That's a good sign. I appreciate that. I get snippets of his day, you know, maybe the sunrise that he sees or a funny thing that he's experienced. And so I get a little bit of his day. I appreciate that connection that we have. Maybe kids who aren't as communicative with their parents in person,
right.
You feel like you know them a little better just because you've seen what's on their story. So I see these positives coming out of it. I also see that there are some kids, some youth that use their platform platform on social media for really positive change. And I think that's encouraging. You know, it's not always the case, but I think it's encouraging when you see that. And I want my kids to know that this could be a positive avenue for them.
That's right. And, you know, Jessica, that reminds me of a book I read called It's Complicated by Dana Boyd that was about social media and teenagers. And I thought she made a very good point, like you were just saying, that we have to remember that one of the big problems for teenagers in our age is that there is a very limited public square. That, you know, we don't live in towns that they can walk away from home and go meet up with the other kids to talk to each other, to get to know each other. We're very isolated. I have actually a nephew and his wife who are missionaries in Budapest, Hungary, and their kids, you know, as teenagers, even as like 10 or 11, can get on the train and head into downtown Budapest and meet all their friends. It's done all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's a way of connecting and socializing that's really important. And the whole issue of fear and danger is not at all like it is here, or at least perceived here. So I think right. You're right. When you're talking about even texting and Snapchat, those are things that help to fill a pretty needed void of interconnectedness. And as I've mentioned here before, one of the general things I have worry about is our teenagers are not connected socially. So I think you make a good point that social media is an important kind of fill in the blank or fill in some of that missing piece of the missing social square.
Yes.
And I agree with you too, Jessica. I really enjoy, I enjoy social media myself, and I enjoy social media with my oldest, my teenager. Mm-hmm. We have a good time. I get to see her day. You know, she lives between two households. And so when she is spending time with her dad, I get to see pictures of what she's doing and just the fun she's having. And we do. It's a way for us to connect and stay connected. And I enjoy it. However,
yep.
I know that usually this topic is pretty polarized. Either parents are for it or they're totally against it. I did a poll on my Instagram for the followers that follow me, and I asked them what they thought about their teens and social media. And the heaviest response was absolutely not, no way. Mm-hmm. And so, Dr. Ken, I would like you to speak into that and kind of give us your expert advice about what are some of the common mistakes parents make in regards to social media with their teenagers.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the funny thing is that, you know, feeding the mouth that bites you. Is it we'll come up with this over and over again. The constant theme here is not, well, you just have to let them do it. Mm-hmm. It is. And so the answer of absolutely no way, I don't think is inappropriate. It's always how old is the kid you're telling that to?
Right.
So I have no problem with you telling an, you know, 10, 11, 12 year old. You know, Bill Gates didn't let his kids have a cell phone until they were 14. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem. I don't with the answer. No, you cannot have social media. The question is always, however, that that no only and always will mean not yet. And you need to demonstrate to your teenagers that this is a progression. So I would not so much say no to any teenager, to a teenager, I'd say not yet. And then you progress from no, you may not have it, to yes, now you can have it. I need your password. Why do you need my password? So that I can check your media account. Right. And then the really part that often doesn't ever get done, which is find that point in later adolescence, say 15, 16, that you say, hey, you need to change your passcode because I don't need to be seeing that anymore. This is now up to you. That's the part that parents get frightened by.
Yes.
Because they feel like, you know, now I'm not monitoring. Usually, if you do what I do, it's easier for me to recommend it because I see just the silly pretend like I think I know what's going on with my teenagers that you really don't.
Right.
The Snapchat that we've covered and made, the Instagram that we've told him to shut it down, and there's two other Instagram accounts they have no idea about, those kind of
things.
Exactly. So it's not a matter of never saying no. It's a matter of with teenagers, you need to demonstrate that this is a progression and you will have the freedom to manage this under our authority. We will agree that now it's not up to us anymore. That's a constant theme that needs to happen with young adults.
Right. I know we talked a little bit about this when we were discussing the fear-based parenting on social media, but there are so many ways that the kids can get around our rules about social media.
Yep.
You, like you said, either opening additional accounts or having burner phones or having apps that are covered by innocent looking calculator apps or other things,
right,
you know, that,
right.
that the conversation has to be opened, because otherwise our kids, they're just going to be hiding things.
That's right.
Just going to be sneaky
right.
about it. So,
and remember, they will be sneaky about it, not because they have character flaws that are evil. They're sneaky about it because they are usually conducting a passive war against you, who is as parents, who are perceived as occupiers that shouldn't be in this part of my life in the first place. And so, you know, it's not about their character. It's about their perceived over control, which really teenagers resent that. Mm-hmm. And they want to know, when will you say that it's time for me to choose this for myself? And it's pretty reasonable. We just need to find the time and place to answer right now. Here it is. It's yours.
Mm-hmm. I love that you explained it that way, because I've talked about this with Brett, my husband, and you know, he's a high school teacher, and he has these high school kiddos that he, you know, cares about, and he teaches them and he does life with them. And he'll say, you know, these are good kids, but these good kids are hiding social media from their parents because their parents are just so controlling, and they're being controlling out of love, but it's fear-based,
right.
like we've talked about.
Right.
And these kids, like you just said, they're not bad kids, but it's this silent war mm-hmm. that you just mm-hmm. mentioned. And
exactly.
I just want so badly for parents to kind of open their eyes. And that's why I'm so grateful for this podcast and you, Dr. Ken, because you can explain this to us parents
yes.
in a way that will help us make wiser choices. And that will just grow, this might be too sentimental, but just grow the heartstrings between the parent and their teen.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's the part that I keep wanting to remind everybody, is that, you know, I come to this progressive letting go thing after 30 years of doing this. Like, I've seen hundreds and hundreds of families and teenagers, and the over control just doesn't work. That's the main thing. It's not about some sort of moral prerogative that I have to do this no matter what. It just isn't going to help. Look at the other side of this, which is when you shut things down out of fear, you're missing the part that it can be so effective, which is really communicating about.
Right.
We know, for example, that social media, you know, girls are very social. Their appearance, their verbal skill, their ability to kind of measure relative distance in relationship. I thought this girl and I were close friends, but she did or said that, and now I'm really doubting. It's all the stuff that boys, who are very easily confused, call drama. They oversimplify, you know, but so social media can be very difficult for girls. They're girls spend puberty just trying to make sense of, what do I look like? Am I attractive? Am I not? I can't make out why people respond to my appearance in this way or that way. And now you're sending out these videos or pictures of yourself. And it's very difficult for girls who watch what is not really the social life of another girl. It's the appearance of this
right.
great social life. Girls, you know, I talk with girls all the time. They know what their best angle is. They know how to take the picture that looks not overdone good, but definitely looks good. They're just very aware of all this.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that that really reduces the self-esteem of teenagers. We know that teenage girls that spend a great deal of time on social media have a higher risk for depression than those with less time. But the answer to that, rather than trying to constantly keep them off of that, think about the importance of, when you are releasing that control, the ability to really talk with her about that, and to talk mm-hmm. with your son about those things. That can only happen after you have given the all clear that this is your part of your life, not me. Can we talk about this, because it worries me, or I see this in you? And teenagers want to talk about that if they don't fear that you're about to jump in and control it.
Right. So how can I help my teen avoid social media drama? And what specific topics should I bring up with them? I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm always behind the ball on this. There's always a new app. There's always a new website. There's always something new to be done out there. And I feel like I can't keep up with it all. And my kids have endless amounts of time to figure all this out. And I'm just at a loss. So what kind of conversation should I be having with them? And
well, I think topics. That early on, while there's still still some teaching window left. And later on, after, you know, you really have to let them have their own control, but you still want to advise them. There are some elements about social media that teenagers often underestimate. One of them is permanence. I'm quite sure that when I was in high school, I don't know if I wrote a note, but I know girls wrote a lot of notes. And I know that we said a lot of ugly things about each other. But I also feel comfortable that this was in the 1970s. Don't judge me. And none of those words still exist. They are gone.
Yes.
But things that are I'm stunned by Twitter, by the way. I mean, I can't imagine that any politician today would not just shut off your Twitter account, because these are adults that say absurd things that you just think, what were you thinking? But if you spend time in that kind of mode, you can forget that these are permanent things. So it is important to talk to teenagers again. And a younger teenager, you can probably sit down and still say, listen, I want you to know a couple things that worry me about this. But with older teenagers, it has to be done in advice, learning how to giving advice. And we'll talk about that another time. But getting across the message that social media is risky because it is permanent. It is searchable. People can then look things up. And it also can be done at all times. It's not in real time, so that a mean statement that you can say to someone when you're with them can be then sent by multiple people all over, you know, at any given time, that can seem like a kind of a ganging up of bullying that was not possible in real time. Things that, you know, you want to really advise teenagers about, because they do often, even though they know better, they, you know, they impulsively misguess what's going to happen to this. Certainly the ever-present, quote, private photo that this poor girl will send to a boy and think that there's such a thing as that being private. It literally never is. So I think finding a way to remind them of those things do make it dangerous. But again, how you present the data and that information is critical, and it has to be done in open communication, not sort of forced workshop lectures that we are going to make you listen to or read this article. Teenagers don't read articles parents give to them.
Right. There are so many times too that my kids are just, they're naive to the effects of their posting. You know, they're very simplistic in the way that they're thinking. They're just taking a picture of themselves with a couple of friends, but they don't realize that that affects the person that's not there or who wasn't chosen.
Oh, I know.
There's so many things that can go wrong, and in so many different ways they have to navigate relationships because of simple, innocent mistakes on social media.
That's so true. Or the girl that knows exactly, by sending this photo with me and these people,
right,
she knows full well that that's so showing that's that, hey, and you're not here. Absolutely.
Yes, it can be intentional, it can be unintentional, and sometimes they can't tell the difference.
So that really has to be, you know, the other thing I want to mention is that social media itself, the power of it is also very much kind of varies based on how much does this young person have real social interaction. Social media is really not social interaction, it's media. So, you know, you can present what, you know, you think is talking to someone, but you're really not. You're typing onto a screen. I saw them having fun. No, you don't. You saw a photo. You know, poor Jessica thinks that she saw her son in lab. That's his Halloween costume. You don't actually know. I don't want to make you paranoid about your son. But the point is, this isn't actual social interaction. It is social representation, but not real. And so girls and guys that have this balanced with real social interaction, lots of real time with other people. And for your boys, for example, that does not count as I'm on my video game with my headset on and talking to my, quote, friends. That is not real interaction. We'll talk about that some other time with video games. But real life interaction is critical. And so I think you need to balance your limiting and your talking about social media with really pretty aggressive attempts to, why don't you and this girl get to, I'll go drive you. I'll talk. Let's get you guys over here. Really, that can be such a struggle because so many kids are just not getting out there. Parents are getting kind of lazy about it and almost feel feel safer that, oh, well, at least, you know, he's here at home. That's what adds more power to social media, because like I say, it's not actually social interaction. It's a media and must be balanced by actual three-dimensional physical presence with other human teenagers.
Right. And it's teaching our kids, it's so important to teach our kids to be producers and not consumers, that we want them to be building on their skills, their photography maybe, or go on a mission trip or go on vacations and enjoy the moment instead of just seeing everybody else's vacation memories or everyone else's photography whatever it is. We want them to explore real life, you know, and be present.
And, you know, a good social relationships, if you think about your own past, a lot of social relationship is based on boredom. You know, my best friend and I all through junior high and high school went to church all the time, which turns out to be a good thing. Who knew? But we were also bored a bunch. Right. And we just got to know each other because there wasn't anything else going on. That actually can be a social skills builder. So I think it's also important for parents not to feel a false pressure of I have to offer some amazing, you know, amusement park experience. Why don't you and your friend just get together? What are we going to do? I don't know. Why don't you just be bored together. That is not a bad thing.
I'm a huge fan of that. That's when you're creative, you know?
Yes.
In a good way, in the best way.
Yes.
Dr. Ken, let's talk about social media and teenagers who have two different households. Because I know that this was personal to us because our daughter got a phone before I would have gotten her one. So can you just kind of speak from your expert advice, what you see? Because surely you see this in your practice.
See it all the time. And virtually always what you're talking about, social media is one good example, but it's not the only example of where my teenagers, the two households that he or she visits, don't have the same limits, the same expectations. And what do I do about my ex who allows these things or doesn't allow things that is in my house, it's not okay, but in her or his house, they allow that. So the general rule, especially with teenagers, is to keep in mind that this is difficult for them. You run the risk if you have very different standards. A teenager is not simply learning what's right and wrong from my mom and my dad. A teenager is writing their own rules for what am I going to decide is right and wrong. And I have two contradictory parents, and you run the risk of really cutting each other off at the knees where neither of you are making any impact. So for example, the really strict, maybe a more godly family that continues to try to say, look, son, I know you want to have this social media, but we believe it's wrong. How, you know, fill in the blank. You need to know that there's not a secret part of the teenager that's going, yeah, I know that's right. And my other parent, you know, is just not being very good. That doesn't happen. Right. So you really have to think about compromise, that if my ex is going to allow this after I've already tried to talk with her, tried to talk with him, and often that doesn't go anywhere, then you really need to think about, to be effective, you can certainly tell your teenager, well, you know, we really don't agree with that, but we want to let you know that I know that's really hard for you. So we're going to allow that because we don't want this to be harder for you. That's much more impactful in kind of the teenager seeing that you recognize that this is a difficult tension. But then you do end up with stuff that's going to scare you, you know, like I didn't want her to have this yet or whatever. And that's where I think it's that much more important that you make sure that you have been clear that we don't think it's right, but that's not your fault. So we're cool with it. Let's talk about that and try to keep that communication open.
Right. That was kind of our stance about it, too.
And even in a home where there is not a divorce, the parents have different limits and different values. And so a lot of times kids know how to play one kid against the other. Go ask dad for that app and don't talk to the other parent, you know, and it can drive a wedge between mom and dad. You know, it's frustrating when you find out your kids are going behind your back or that they have learned who to ask for certain things.
That's exactly right. You know, that's very true. The divorce very often just kind of highlights a difference that was going to be there anyway, or and certainly exists in households that are still married. You know, you can often have a hidden, or you think it's a hidden conflict. conflict where the mom and the dad don't agree on what to make a deal out of or whatever, but it's not hidden to your teenagers. They always know who's really running the show, who's passive, whatever. They can sense that. So yeah, it applies regardless of whether it's two households or one that is still one household but has tension.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I think that, you know, when we are discussing social media with our kids and also honestly with ourselves, we need to look at the way that we're investing our time and decide for ourselves, is this making me better to be a part of this? And have that discussion with our kids, you know, is this use of your time or this use of these different apps making you a better person? Is it helping you and encouraging them to think about this? I mean, it's a conversation we need to have with ourselves and as a family,
right.
How these things, is this improving our character? Is this is this improving our witness for Christ? And is it helping me become a stronger and smarter and more intelligent person? Or is this really dumbing me down?
That's right.
Or am I using my time wisely? You know,
yes.
Am I spending too much time on these social media apps, or am I neglecting the things in real life? So I think it's a constant evaluation, like you said, for ourselves and for our kiddos. But, you know, personally, I'm a fan of it. I'm just having those open conversations, but it goes deeper than just having social media. These conversations that you have behind the scenes with your kiddos, with your teens, you know, and you know your kids, you know what they struggle with, you know what their strengths are and their weaknesses are. And I think that constant evaluation helps to make a wiser decision when it comes to, is my kid ready for this? Are they handling it well?
And it makes you, it gives you the clarity to go through the necessary journey with all children from no to not yet to now this is yours.
Yes.
Right.
That's so good. So
they're going to have it. They're going to have it one day, right? Because
that's
I don't
right.
see it going away. I just
no.
see more apps being created. You know how Facebook used to be the thing and now it's kind of for the grandparents. And
that's right.
Parents are more on Instagram and the kids are on Snapchat. So I don't see it going away. So how can we handle it, you know, in a wise way and be healthy about it?
Yes. Well, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate both of you and both of your thoughts and your comments. And Dr. Ken, I really appreciate your reminding us that this is a phase out of control.
That's right.
And that we need to be thoughtful about our kids' ages and personalities as we make these decisions and as we give them more and more opportunity to spread their wings and make their own decisions.
That's
so
right.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, both of you, for the chat today. I appreciate your input.
Enjoyed it.
Yes, we'll talk again soon. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us today. Hit the subscribe button so you won't miss an episode. Also, leave us a review. This is how other listeners find our podcast. Follow us on Instagram at Feeding the Mouth.
We appreciate you and would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, thoughts, or ideas about what we've discussed today, please email us at podcast@feedingthemouth.com.